Chapter 5, Section 8, What Went Wrong? The problem was me. I had massively underestimated the intentions of the parent company. I should have known better given that I had spent over 3 years, 2002 to 2005, trying to persuade the parent company that 3D printing would have a big future, or my more recent attempts that mobile phones would dominate the camera market. The parent company had become preoccupied with said televisions and focusing on its core market, cameras and printers. Despite the potential that I saw, we were becoming less core to them, and they had already begun removing R&D efforts in a focus on efficiency. They had brought in an outside consultancy to look at our platform and concluded that utility computing wasn't the future, and the potential for cloud computing, as it became known, was unrealistic. Remember, this was 2006. Amazon had barely launched. Even in 2009, big-name consultancies were still telling companies that public cloud wasn't the future, or at least was a long way away. The parent company's future involved outsourcing our lines of business to a systems integrator, SI, and as I was told, the whole vision of Zimki was way beyond their scope. I had several problems here. First, they wouldn't invest in our service because apparently a decision had been made higher up within the parent company on what was core. What they were concerned with was the smooth movement of our lines of business to the SI. That supported their core aims and their needs. When I raised the idea of external investment, then the problem became they couldn't keep a stake in something which they said was not core. When I raised the idea of a management buyout, they would always go to what they had described as an unrealistic $200 billion market figure for 2016. Surely, I would be willing to pay a hefty sum based upon this future market as a given for a fledgling startup in a fledgling market. No venture capital firm would take such an outrageous one-sided gamble. In any case, I was told the discussion could always be left until after the core revenue services were transferred to the SI. This was just shorthand for go away. The nail in the coffin was when I was told by one of the board that the members had decided to postpone the open sourcing of our platform and that they wanted me to immediately sign contracts cancelling our revenue generating services at an unspecified date to be filled in later. As the person who normally chaired the board meeting then, I was annoyed at being blindsided, the choice and myself. Somehow, in my zeal to create a future focused on user needs and a meaningful direction, I had forgotten to gain the political capital I needed to pull it off. I might have created a strong purpose and built a company capable of achieving it, but I had messed up big time with the board. It wasn't their fault, they were focusing on what was core to the parent company and their needs. The members were all senior executives of the parent company, and it should have been obvious that they were bound to take this position. I realized that I have never truly involved them in our journey and had become preoccupied with building a future for others. I had not even fully explained to them our maps relying instead on stories, but this was because I still hadn't realized how useful maps really were. In my mind, maps were nothing more than my way of explaining strategy, because I hadn't yet found that magic term that every other executive learnt at business school. This was a powerful group of users, my board and the parent company, that had needs that I had not considered. Talk about a rookie mistake. I had finally been rumbled as that imposter CEO. There was no coming back from this, they were adamant on their position and had all the power to enforce it. I was about to go on stage at OSCON, O'Reilly Open Source Conference, in 2007, and rather than my carefully crafted message, I had to somehow announce the non-open sourcing of our platform and the non-creation of a future competitive utility market. I was expected to break a promise I had made to our customers, and I was pretty clear that postpone was a quaint way of saying never. I couldn't agree with the direction they had chosen, and we were at loggerheads. My position was untenable and I resigned. The company's services were quickly placed on the path to being outsourced to the SI, and the employees were put through a redundancy program which all started a few days after I resigned. The platform was disbanded and closed by the end of the year. The concepts, however, weren't lost, as a few of these types of ideas made their way through James Duncan into Reasonably Smart, acquired by Joyent, and another good friend of mine, James Wathers, into Cloud Foundry. I note that Pivotal and its platform Play is now valued at over $2.5 billion and serverless is a rapidly growing concept in 2016. As for said televisions? Well, some you win, some you lose. As for the consultancy, any frustration I might have is misdirected because I was the one who failed here. It was my job to lead the company and that didn't just mean those who worked for me but also the board. In these first chapters, I've hopefully shown you how to understand the landscape you're competing in, anticipate the future, learn to apply doctrine, develop context-specific gameplay, build the future and then finally blow it by ignoring one set of users. Would Zimki have realized its potential and become a huge success? We will never know, but it had a chance. This was my first run through the strategy cycle and at least I felt as though I had a vague idea as to what I was doing rather than that naive youth of seems fine to me. I was still far from the exalted position of that confident executive that I had met and I was determined to get better next time. Fortunately for me, there was a next time, but that's another part of the story.